Hello and welcome to the Total Soccer Show. My name is Daryl Grove and I'm joined by a man who's 50% less happy than I am this evening. His name is Taylor Rockwell, the American. Hello.
Hello. We're starting with math. Never a good sign.
Yeah. So not a fun performance from the United States. If you haven't heard the score, it finished England 3, the US 0.
It did.
I've got to say, I'm pretending I enjoyed England's performance, but the American support inside of me was down enough about it that I couldn't fully enjoy the things that, say, Jadon Sancho and Jesse Lingard and co did.
Yeah, it was surprising to the extent that there was one sequence in the first half where they really were just kind of moving the ball for fun and showing off a few flicks and tricks here and there. And Daryl, I feel like, genuinely had a, like, good God, England. Like, in this sort of, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
How dare you sort
no,
of way.
No, it was kind of like a stop, he's already dead type
yeah,
thing.
I know.
Rather than, I mean, against any other opponent, yeah. I'd be like, whoa, I'm loving this.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, it's that, like, the no points on the line, obviously. Mm-hmm. England have that big game against Croatia on Sunday.
Yeah.
And I really just didn't want the US embarrassed at Wembley. And I feel like we didn't quite get there, but we tiptoed towards embarrassment.
If England looked like...
Am I being too down?
No. to the extent that my question was going to be, if England look like kind of lethargic and slow and like a little bit overconfident against Croatia, are you going to blame the United States for that?
You pumped us up too much.
Or it was you like, pumped us up. You made us think that we were really good.
Worth noting, this was very much an England second string, or at least a somewhat second choice, like, fight, show me you can play in the first 11 lineup from England. For example, Callum Wilson, centre forward, not Harry Kane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that
Dunk and Keane, centre backs, not Stones and Gomez.
And that can go one of two ways, because you could have the second string team that can then maybe not be quite as sharp, not quite as effective as the first team. Or you can have the second string team that all want to justify why they should be first string.
Yeah.
And so they're working that much harder and executing the game plan like that much more thoroughly, as opposed to maybe if it's Raheem Sterling, he tries to do a few more step overs when you're 2-0 up. Instead, it felt like England did a pretty successful job of killing the game off and continuing to do what they wanted to do.
I was about to say that's unfair to pick on Raheem Sterling. And then I remember that he did exactly that at the end of the Manchester derby to the point where Pep Guardiola had to have a word with him.
Well, there's that. Yeah. I think there was also, he was one of the only ones that didn't get on the field. So he was the easy one to go with. Yeah.
Okay, so England were good. Maybe we'll talk more about England later.
Sure.
If you're up for it. We were talking in studio about how to talk about this from a reviewing the US performance perspective. And I think the correct lens might be, instead of just complaining about everything, to think of this as the penultimate game of the Dave Sarakin era, and to think of, with all respect to Dave Sarakin, the things that we've seen Dave Sarakin teams not get right, or the areas they failed when they play good opposition, which I'm classing England alongside, say, Colombia, maybe Brazil, and why that doesn't work, why that hasn't worked, especially this year. But within that, what little good performances there were from US players.
Okay.
Right? So like a structural complaint with some praise for specific players and maybe some optimism for the post-Sarakin future.
I feel like you're saying this to me as much as you are outlining the show for our
and
listeners.
Also to me.
All right.
It's a self-pep talk.
So where would you like to start then?
I think I'd like to start with the defensive shape that the US took up for the first 30 minutes or so, during which time England had a bunch of chances, a good penalty shout, and two goals.
Yeah.
Which for me is good evidence that that shape did not work.
Mm-hmm.
Worth thinking about, though, this is the same shape, and we'll detail it in a minute, the same shape that Dave Sarakin has more or less selected any time we've played a good team, except that time we went 5-3-2 against France and sat back.
Right. Yeah. And I feel like he did that just so that we would always have that one frame of reference to be like, but maybe they're going to go back five, and then they never would again.
Oh, we fell into it twice on our preview shows,
this
right?
That's true.
But again, in hindsight, don't you kind of wish the US had gone out at Wembley in a 5-3-2 and everybody sat back in a disciplined way and challenged England to try and play their way through them?
It couldn't have been worse. I mean, at least then it's a dedicated defensive plan and emphasis on plan at that point, because at least then you've got the numbers behind and you kind of have a little bit more, if not familiar positioning, then like known positioning, that if you're in that back five, it's pretty easy to know your like area of influence and operate within it. And I do think that was kind of the problem with this US team, is it almost felt like they had been told, okay, be really compact and everybody crowd the middle so England can't come through the middle. They have to go wide and then we'll deal with the crosses. And then right as they went out or something, they being the United States, they were told like, actually, if they're wide, make sure somebody steps to them. And so then it was this weird, maybe do both and thus do neither very well.
I would agree with it being a last minute instruction if we hadn't also seen it in multiple other games.
Well, that.
Under Dave Sarakin. And for those who haven't spotted it before, it is essentially we sit in a very obvious 4-4-2, yep. right? And in this point, Julian Green and Bobby Wood were the two forwards. Very obvious 4-4-2. And you would think, okay, stay in that shape, see if England can play through, maybe give them the wings, let them bang some crosses in, Matt Miazga will head it away, etc. But instead, whenever the ball went wide, say England went to their right back, mm-hmm. Trent Alexander-Arnold, Tim Weah would not stay in line with his other midfielders. He's the left mid. Mm-hmm. He would go charging out. I talked in the preview about it. I don't want to see the pop out. We saw the pop out a lot. Tim Weah would charge out. That would pull Villafania up to try and cover someone else. Then a little hole opens and then England exploit that gap. It happened again and again and again and again. It was never going to work. That is a terrible plan. Everybody be disciplined and in shape, except we'll have just one guy go chase the ball on his own.
Yeah, I agree. I would say, though, I think it starts for me, strangely enough, with the front two. And I don't mean to say Green that Bobby Wood and Julian Green didn't do what they were supposed to do, mm-hmm. but I think the thing that they were going for, they being the United States, is in that 4-4-2, if you keep Green and Wood sort of together centrally, and if they do move right to left or left to right, they still only have maybe 10 yards between them. I think the goal there is...
They do that, right?
Right. Yeah. And then I think the goal is you can't play through the middle as easily, mm-hmm. so then you kind of don't need as many numbers in the midfield. The frustrating thing, though, was that felt like a almost Maginot line defense of like, haha, we'll be able to do it. And then it sort of was like England would play it wide to the right,
yeah.
and then Bobby Wood and Julian Green are still standing central, and now you have access to the entire midfield.
And for those without the same historical knowledge uh-huh. as Taylor, I think I'm going to take a guess. Maginot uh-huh. line is the French
defensive wall.
Artillery, a defensive wall mm-hmm. type thing that they thought was solid, but turned out to be very easy to
go
through.
Well, they forgot that Belgium existed. So yes. yes. More or less. Yeah. So, yeah. But that's
but
what it
felt like. Essentially
a
defensive plan that didn't work.
Exactly. And so it felt like they would keep those numbers central, but then as soon as England would move the ball wide, now they can play it diagonally into the middle and that those front two forwards mm-hmm. are no longer doing anything.
Yeah.
But then also, yeah, to your point, you've got then a player has to go wide to cover somebody and then one of the central midfielders has to drift over to try to come to cover somebody else theoretically. And then you're kind of stretched already before you're even really under pressure, and then it kind of collapses from there.
It's like you're making holes appear yep. and inviting England to exploit them, right? And there's yep. also a cascade. Again, like if Weah goes, then Villafania has to cheat, and maybe Will Trapp or Weston McKennie has to cheat over a little bit, and mm-hmm. suddenly any solidity you had in that 4-4-2 mm-hmm. is gone because there's a person missing.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, there are definitely moments of creative awareness bordering on like brilliance from certain England players of, oh, if I move into this space and then check away, somebody will come with me. That will open up space for other players. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely like England get credit, yeah. but it also feels a little bit like the United States set up in this game with a system that like basically what they wanted England to do, England did and were still able to play their exact game they wanted to play. So it felt like a system set up to fail almost immediately.
Mm-hmm. Okay, shall we get to the England goals?
Sure.
Okay, first goal is the Jesse Lingard mm-hmm. goal from, he's sort of like the top right from an American perspective, top left from Jesse Lingard's perspective mm-hmm. of the England area. It's a beautiful shot, hit with a nice bit of curl on it to go around and over and mm-hmm. then in behind Brad Guzan.
He's been watching Anthony Martial at Manchester United.
Yeah, no fault on Brad Guzan at all.
No.
I don't mm-hmm. think on this. Where is the fault for this goal?
Strangely, when we first watched it, we were sure it was Matt Miazga or DeAndre Yedlin.
Because Miazga was so far yeah. from Lingard when he has the shot.
Or yeah. DeAndre Yedlin and Will Trapp, like overloading on one side and maybe not being as aware of Jesse Lingard. When you rewatch it, it's pretty much squarely on the shoulders of Christian Pulisic.
I almost don't want to agree with you because I feel like it's going to mm-hmm. be an unpopular decision. But having reviewed the evidence, it mm-hmm. It's Christian Pulisic.
And that was one of the differences watching live versus the replay is like in the lead up to this goal, my secondary notes from watching it the second time, there are three, before this goal happens, there are three of Christian Pulisic chasing and then leaving his man in a row in the 21st, 23rd, 24th minute. Then with this goal, he does the same thing, basically.
Does he basically chase the ball?
He's ball watching the whole time. Yeah, anywhere the ball goes, he goes.
Kind of ball chasing, mm-hmm. but then just ruining it for the person who did mark that man.
Yeah.
And also leaving the guy maybe he should have been with, mm-hmm. leaving him open.
Yeah, if it felt like almost like his energy bar in FIFA, like you're just running and running and running, and it went down. And then right when it went down, he would kind of stop to like re-energize. And that's when the person he was marking would go on a run, and mm-hmm. then they were open. It happened a couple times with Chilwell in the first half, and here it's Jesse Lingard just kind of drifts to the top of the box. Christian Pulisic, you can watch it on the reverse angle where it's like from the end line and they're filming that way, you can see him just staring at the ball and slowly jogging over. And then even when Jesse Lingard gets it, Christian Pulisic shapes to like defend the outside as though that ball is going to come back into the channel.
Yeah.
And Jesse Lingard just turns and shoots.
So it's what Ali and Dele Alli, Ben Chilwell down the left, Yedlin and I believe Will Trapp are over there covering. And yeah, Pulisic then lets Lingard go free and that's why he has all that space to shoot. Worse than that.
Oh yeah, I forgot about this.
Isn't it Pulisic that loses the ball initially? Mm-hmm. It's not a great clearance, I don't believe, from DeAndre Yedlin, but Pulisic tries to bring it down and take a touch inside, and he kind of succeeds in that, but runs straight into. I can't remember who it was.
I think he just kind of miscontrols it, and then it's loose, and it's between two England players, and then England have possession.
It's picked off, right? I mean, not the worst thing, right? Because he's trying to make something happen at midfield.
Yeah. But if you'll forgive me to go back a couple minutes, I do think because again, I remember that happening, that miscontrol, but it came on the heels of him getting that breakaway,
almost taking the lead, right?
Exactly. And in that moment, it felt like, oh, he's having a good game. He just tried to do a little bit too much there. And when you rewatch it, for most of the first half, he is chasing a lot and he's making some bad decisions. And I think
wait, people will think that chasing a lot is a good thing.
Yeah.
Whereas I would say he's just aimlessly chasing the ball and paying no attention to team shape, which goes back to the thing I'm complaining about having a shape, but then also people kind of just freelancing to chase the ball, kind of like Tim Weah did on the other side.
Yeah. But it's that, but it's then also the case, and like I didn't see him like yelling at anybody, so don't get me wrong there. But it's the case of like if I'm marking a player and then I go running over to help Daryl mark somebody, and then the ball goes to who I was marking.
Yeah.
It sort of is like that's great, you're gonna
hear about it from me.
I know, but it's also like I went over to double team you, which is theoretically okay, but then I've also left my man who now has the ball, and then I'm 20 yards, 15 yards, whatever away.
And so, and I'll be honest, if that was me, I'd be thinking, I'm slightly insulted that Taylor thought I needed that help, and he ruined the system by leaving that guy and just made it harder for everybody.
Yeah. And so
I'd still be friends with you, but yeah.
That's fair. I appreciate that. But so it felt like he was doing a lot of that type of running, which didn't necessarily put him in the best positions when he would get the ball. So then I think if you watch that, like the quote-unquote breakaway again, first off,
the Pulisic breakaway.
It's meant to be a pass to Bobby Wood, obviously. Bobby Wood, we think correctly, ruled himself offside.
We paused it and took a good look.
Yeah.
Like, Trent Alexander-Arnold is a little deep, but I think maybe just a toe of Wood was slightly off. Yeah,
a toe of Wood.
Yeah.
So then it's Christian Pulisic runs on, but I think if you see this sequence from he's kind of having a shaky game at this point, he runs on, gets the ball, takes a touch, then he takes another touch, and then he takes another touch, and then tries to shoot. And I think Christian Pulisic, if he's in form and feeling it, takes a touch and then finishes it because he's pulled Jordan Pickford out. Jordan Pickford is off his line, and then Pulisic takes another touch.
Isn't the one defender coming? I think he tries to get as far away as he can and takes himself to a bad angle.
And there's a part of me that, I mean, then that's maybe 30 seconds before this sequence happens, the miscontrol from Pulisic that leads to the goal. And I do wonder if maybe he's in his head a little bit at that moment of like, oh, I should have done better there. Oh, here comes the ball. I'm going to try to control it, and he miscontrols it, and it maybe is as close as we've seen for Christian Pulisic since maybe the Cuba game to like trying too much, too many expectations, and maybe just kind of the game fell away a little bit.
All right, I want to talk more Christian Pulisic in a second.
That works for me.
But first, I want to talk about Simple Contacts.
Let's do it.
Simple Contacts is the most convenient way to renew your contact lens prescription and reorder your brand of contacts from anywhere in minutes. I know this because I've done this.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Let's talk about it.
I have used the Simple Contacts app. When my prescription was current, I did a very simple thing where I just clicked through, reorder, my contact lenses came to my door. Lovely. Yep. Then I stuck them in my eyes. Then I played soccer. I've also done a thing when my prescription was outdated or expired, and I did a vision test with the Simple Contacts app. It takes about, I want to say, 10 minutes, maybe 5. It takes about 5 minutes. I'm going to say less than 5 minutes. I put my phone up.
Yep.
They walked me through a vision test that I did. You know, the old thing where the letters are different sizes and you have to read them out. It all works. And you kind of, if you pass, essentially, then your prescription is renewed. And then you can order your contacts.
You can indeed. I am not a contacts wearer. My wife is. She used the service. And one of the things I think she was appreciative of is that it's not just like specific brands or brands that are unique to Simple Contacts. It is all the brands and types of lenses that you might like. They have available. So you don't have to kind of give up what you're used to in order to use the service. They have everything covered.
Well, so your wife is happy and I'm happy.
There we go.
With Simple Contacts.
Which I believe makes me happy since you two are the people that I interact with the most.
We can all see clearly.
Exactly.
We've always got our eye on you.
It does. It doesn't mean that you don't still need to get your periodic full eye health exam.
Yes.
This is not a replacement for that.
Yep. And I can prove that because despite genuinely being a Simple Contacts user, I'm going for my full eye health exam.
There we go.
Friday morning.
Responsible adulting, my friend.
Good job. If you want to order your contacts through Simple Contacts, you can get $20 off your contacts. You go to simplecontacts.com/TSS20 and then use code TSS20 at checkout. That's simplecontacts.com/TSS20 and use code TSS20 at checkout for $20 off your contacts.
Thank you very much to Simple Contacts for sponsoring today's episode. Less thanks go to Jesse Lingard for putting the U.S. 1-0 down.
Yeah.
And I just want to finish that part of our first goal recap.
I still want to talk about Christian Pulisic, but I'm just saying
within the lens of this goal.
Pun intended?
It better have been.
Always intend your puns.
Never, because you know my feeling on puns. But I would say it is an amazingly well-struck shot.
Yeah.
And again, there's no fault on Brad Guzan. It is just the case, though, that it's because Jesse Lingard has the time and the space, because it's Miazga who then essentially gets posterized because he has to try to close down a 10-yard gap that shouldn't be there. Because Lingard has that time, he can pick out that shot. If he's got five yards more pressure or less pressure, he then maybe can't finish that one quite so easily.
Okay, to get to I agree with all that, which ties into the Pulisic problem that we had. This goes to my bigger idea of being frustrated with this Dave Sarakan team and the way they're set up. My feeling is that either Christian Pulisic was just a very talented player who's in very poor form, who was just trying to make something happen.
Yeah.
And that's why he was chasing the ball. That's why he was always dribbling. That's why he was always just trying to prove something, trying to make something happen. Or given how many times Pulisic has, through injuries large and small, dropped out of US teams while Dave Sarakan has been head coach, I wonder if Sarakan gave Christian Pulisic too much freedom to do whatever he wanted.
Yep. I mean, I think that's a distinct possibility.
And we've
seen that with Christian Pulisic in teams past. When he first came in for the Copa America Centenario, he was told by Klinsmann, go have fun, go try stuff, or whatever.
But that was only in quick cameos, right? He was very much a junior member of the team at that point. I worry that now he's almost become too senior and Sarakan's just let him run wild.
I mean, but I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if his instructions were roughly the same as go out there, run a lot, try stuff. You're the one we're looking to counter, because I do think the United States' game plan theoretically was be defensive, sit back, and then be very direct in the counterattack and try to kind of make England uncomfortable.
Yes.
And so part of that, I think, was him looking to go forward as quickly as possible and looking to put himself in positions where if that ball popped loose, he's there to get the ball turned and play it forward.
Do you think that's what the chasing the ball thing was about? Yeah. It's not so much about him being determined to win it, of just him wanting to be there as soon as it pops so CP can accelerate and go.
Yeah, I do, because I would also say we haven't talked much about the second goal yet.
We will do.
But he does this here where he kind of drifts central behind the play. And the only reason I can see him doing that is because if the shot gets blocked or if the ball gets poked away, he is then there behind all the England players to turn and go.
Oh, isn't it? So on the second goal, Trent Alexander-Arnold goal. Yeah, Pulisic's on the US right.
Yep.
Down the England left, aren't there Lingard and Chilwell both wide open?
Yep.
And Pulisic's not out there to track them. He's more waiting for that ball from central to pop loose so he can go.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, and I was just going to say, but these are similar problems and complaints to what we've had from the US in the last two games, now three games, under Dave Sarakan. And it does make me wonder if maybe he thought, but that was when we had other players out there. When it's Christian Pulisic on the right, defenses will be scared and they won't be so inclined to attack. Because part of the problem as well was, again, it was DeAndre Yedlin and Jorge Villafañe, the two outside backs, were very narrow. Mm-hmm. So then there's tons of space out wide and you're dependent upon your midfielder coming back to fill that space.
Or they're dragged up when someone else pops forward.
Yeah,
right?
and so it ends up leaving space. Yeah.
I wanted to put this in the frame of us sort of being ready for...
Sure.
As much as he's a nice man, ready for the end of the Dave Sarakan era, because I don't think this is going to be a permanent Christian Pulisic problem. We haven't suddenly found a flaw in his game where he chases the ball like a 7-year-old.
There's no way
we would have noticed it before.
There's no way he's gotten to the level he's at and playing at the level he's playing.
Yeah,
just ball watching the whole time.
Ball chasing.
Yeah.
Like a kid. Like every Dortmund coach would have said, "Nope, you're not ready. Go back and play for the U19s."
Yeah.
Right. So, in a way, it's not worth getting too worked up about it. It's more just a structural problem for today.
Yes.
Yeah?
I think so.
Right.
I did enjoy George Qureshi, I'm going to assume tongue firmly in cheek, tweeted...
I think his tongue is stuck in his cheek.
That could be. I think he tweeted something along the lines of you have to give it to U.S. soccer, scheduling all these games they did under an interim manager will make the permanent manager look that much more composed and together when they have any sort of a plan.
I think the next opponent is 1970 Brazil.
That could be problematic.
Should we talk about that second goal then?
Sure.
It's the strike from Trent Alexander-Arnold.
It is.
There's a lot going on in the build-up, but eventually it's our other wide player, Tim Weah, doesn't track Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Well, I would say this. I don't mean to take us back, but I would say, I mean, they're a minute apart, and that's key to me because we're getting the replays of the first goal, and then it cuts to a close-up of Dele Alli kind of running around because he's the one who scored it. And when the camera cuts back to the wide angle, the United States has just given the ball away.
Yeah, we don't know
kickoff.
How, do we?
No, but that's the first, inside 60 seconds, the United States gets the ball back and gives it away three times in the lead-up to the second goal.
That's true because, yeah, there's a couple of England attacks where we just hit not great clearances and England have the ball. Yeah, you're correct. So that's a thing to be not thrilled about.
Nope.
For the actual goal, though, I was saying essentially Tim Weah playing left midfield, Trent Alexander-Arnold, just like goes outside of him and gets the goes on his blind side, gets the run on him.
Yeah, and I think it's Weah ball watching a little bit, and also maybe thinking Trent.
He wasn't Trent watching.
He was not, but I think he was, and even by the time he notices it, it still is the case that even if he picks it up with Trent Alexander-Arnold, maybe 5 yards behind Weah, it's still Trent Alexander-Arnold at full speed and Weah kind of standing, so then he's got to try to get up to speed as fast as he can. He's never going to be able to do that, so he's then always going to be trailing.
Can I say this about Tim Weah?
Sure.
18-year-old, right? Really talented attacking player.
Yep.
In hindsight, it's a lot to ask for Tim Weah, striker, to play left midfield, like fully defensive left midfield, basically, right? Didn't get a chance to get that far forward because England always had the ball in the first half. To ask him to play left mid against England is a huge, huge ask.
100%.
And I think we saw some of the limits of what happens when you have a talented striker playing left mid against a good team.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I would say if you want a more optimistic way to look at this game and this team...
Yes, please.
I would say this. Like, I am not happy with the way... I have no ill will towards Dave Sarokin, but I'm not happy with the way the coaching search has happened, the fact that it's, 13 months on, we still have the interim manager, but we know that's the case, so that aside, what I would say is look at these games as opportunities where we saw some bright spots from Christian Pulisic. He was the one who could go at people. We saw the same thing from Timothy Weah, where he did adjust his defensive game a little bit to deal with some of the problems. We saw him be the one direct running at people.
That's worth noting. He did get better at his defensive positioning.
He did.
That's a positive sign that he eventually figured it out. Yeah.
And so I would say we saw some deficiencies in, I would say, pretty much everybody's games tonight for the U.S. national team. But then that gives you something to watch the next time around when we have a permanent manager in there. Is Timothy Weah still making those mistakes, or were they more representative of the system and what he was being asked to do? And in one where he has more structure, is he just kind of killing it? So that's where I am with this stuff, is rather than be mad about the situation, I will still be mad, but rather than let that bleed into just my overall viewing of the U.S. national team, I'm choosing to see it more so as, okay, so we know what the bottom is. Let's see how we get out of there.
We've seen the floor. Let's go to the ceiling.
This is definitely not the bottom. Trinidad was the bottom.
For a different set of players. Uh-huh. Okay, so here's one way I look at it as well. So the first 30 minutes, maybe a bit more, it's that weird 4-4-2 with people popping out, which causes problems, which England exploit, right? When we have the ball, we sort of go a little too direct. There's a lot of Bobby Wood chasing direct balls. That's our best plan of attack, right? The upside of all this is that after, I want to say in 35 minutes and then for the second half, the US switches from that 4-4-2 to what sounds like a more defensive formation, but actually is more attacking in terms of our defending. More aggressive. We go 4-1-4-1. Trapp stays deep. Weston McKennie goes and joins Julian Green, and everybody pushes quite a lot higher. And it wasn't 100% successful, but it stopped England exploiting the US a lot more.
Yes.
Right? And it was more enjoyable to watch.
It certainly was. So number one, it's definitely more enjoyable. Number two, you're then putting England under at least a little bit of pressure.
Yeah.
And so then just that little bit of pressure caused them to pass the ball out of bounds a couple times in the second half or at the end of the first half and look a bit more direct. And then suddenly, instead of it being direct to Callum Wilson, kind of open running into the channel with two runners coming off of him, it was a much more static Callum Wilson with two center backs around him.
Yes.
And then the United States started winning those balls. The third positive for me in that sort of more aggressive pressing is that even if England are able to play through it, you're still putting them under pressure higher up the field so that if you win the ball back, you're getting it higher up. And if you turn the ball over again, then at least you're turning it over 30 yards from their goal as opposed to 30 yards from your own goal, which is what the United States routinely did in the first half.
So my big takeaway is we need to choose one, right? We either need to do like a 4-4-2 block where we just stay in the block and everybody hold the shape. And at least the job is simple, right? Just hold position, hold the shape, don't let them through. Or we go, the thing is, everybody go full pressure and we'll try and like shut them down all the way up there. Yeah. Didn't you and I talk about this mm-hmm. in studio off mic about how it's easier when the players don't have to make difficult decisions, yes. right? So Ware doesn't have to make a difficult decision whether to go charging out or not if he knows that, yes, we're either definitely charging out or no, we're either definitely staying deep, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, but it requires that training and that like kind of consistent work in practice to know I shouldn't pop out here because, and again, the pop out is like if Timothy Weah is like inside.
I've made the phrase pop out happen.
I mean, it's a good phrase, and especially for these purposes because it is Timothy Weah staying central and trying to be contained. But then suddenly, if you've got Trent Alexander-Arnold advancing unmarked and he's got nobody around him and he can easily dribble to within 35, 40 yards of the U.S. goal,
yeah.
the natural inclination is somebody's got to go pressure him, so I'll go. And I think it requires so much discipline to sit back and just say, like, I'm still going to invite that player on and I'm going to back myself to win it when the time comes, that unless you have that drilling and that instruction over and over and over again, it's almost an impossible task because eventually instinct is going to kick in and someone's going to run out and then you're leaving space.
Okay, I want to give a positive example sure. of when the U.S. applied high pressure. Mm-hmm. And the best one I can think of is the Will Trapp
yep.
big tackle. On Fabian Delph. It's like mm-hmm. a big hit on yeah. Fabian Delph. Doesn't this end with a Julian Green turns and goes and shoots at goal, mm-hmm. right? Maybe Julian Green should have slipped in Tim Weah instead.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But I would say he was one of the players that I didn't have an issue with.
Yes.
I was kind of surprised by that. I'll uh-huh. be honest, I wasn't thrilled to see him in the lineup.
No, I don't think anybody was.
Because of what we talked about in our preview, yeah.
I'm with you. I was pleasantly surprised by Julian Green's, I think especially when we changed the tactics up, mm-hmm. And maybe there's a bit more space and it was a bit more, things were a bit more open and lively, yeah. right? He was very good at turning and facing his own team, receiving the ball, making a turn,
yep.
playing a forward pass, right?
100%,
and
yep.
if Viafania could cross the ball, there's a couple of times yep. that could have worked out really nicely.
Yeah, and he had
due respect to Jorge Viafania. I'm sure he can cross the ball, but there were at least two fails in this game.
I think he can cross it. I wouldn't say I'm sure. I would say, though, that he had some good balls in Green did for Timothy Weah in other moments. And mm-hmm. so I did feel like he was one of the ones who was trying to pull in an English defender, then play the ball through,
yeah.
or in this case, get a shot off. But I think to your point, the thing that stood out to me about this sequence, this counterattack, is that it almost felt like England were like, whoa, where'd that come from?
Yes.
Like Will Trapp wins that ball, and it's an aggressive tackle that if he like has an inch off, he maybe slips off the ball, goes over top into Fabian Delph's leg, and it's a red card.
Yeah.
In this case, it's not. But it did feel like that entire England team was like, and you could hear the crowd kind of like, whoa, like that mm-hmm. looks bad. And then England kind of backed off a little bit. And it was one of the few times in the first half where we saw England sort of be like, whoa, you guys are capable of that? Okay, I don't want to deal with that.
Here's the weird thing. It reminded me a little bit.
I said like, whoa, like six times there, but whatever.
You go
Black, me and Black Rob.
You're going surfing after this. Who's Black Rob?
A rapper who has a song called Whoa.
Oh, okay. So remember the November 2017 game,
mm-hmm.
Dave Sarakan's first game, and we played, I think it was a second string, but Portugal away, and we went at them, right? We kind of pressured them high up the field, and it felt exciting.
Yeah.
When did we get away from that?
It's a good question.
It's like we've come full circle to that working again.
I would say like this
I mean, working is strong. We still lost 1-0 mm-hmm. in the second half of this game playing that way.
I know this is probably way too much of an oversimplification, but that question almost makes me wonder if he was doing that, like in the Portugal game, it was without Christian Pulisic. Then he's had other games where he had Pulisic, but he didn't have Weston McKennie, or Weston McKennie pulled out and so did Pulisic. And I almost wonder if this was the first time he's had kind of all of those players at his disposal, and he was sort of like, well, that's it. That's all we need is once we have everybody in there, we'll be totally good to go and everybody will be afraid. And so we don't need to do some of the work we did in other games because we were missing players.
Oh, maybe.
I mean, I know that's ludicrous, but it also feels like maybe it's not ludicrous given the way this game went.
We did finally have Pulisic, mm-hmm. Adams, McKennie on the field all at the same time for the first time ever in American history.
Yay.
So that's worth being excited about, at least that has happened.
Yeah. I'll give you that one. And I found like when they were on the field together exciting. I felt like the United States did okay when Weston McKennie and Timothy Weah left for decent stretches of the game. But I did feel like seeing Tyler Adams back there, I don't think Will Trapp had a bad game by
any stretch.
I think
Will Trapp had a pretty good game with the occasional couple of mistakes.
I would say he
remember when Dele Alli sort of just robbed him because Will Trapp didn't look around correctly?
Yeah, that wasn't great.
Yeah.
I would say he was in my top three performers, certainly.
Okay.
But I thought Tyler Adams coming in, I saw things from him that makes me further understand why you want him to be the number six for the U.S.
Please detail them.
Well, it was just that, like, I saw him under pressure bring the ball down and make smart decisions. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it was playing it forward, sometimes lateral, sometimes back.
We're going to forget that one weird back heel that didn't come off, right?
Yeah, okay. We didn't talk about that. But I would also say, on a point you made, was that he's just also, because he's so mobile, I just always had this idea that he, like, his mobility would just be running around all the time. And to me, it's like, that's not what you want a number six
sort
to be.
Sort of like Christian Pulisic was
a little
doing,
bit.
Yeah.
But what he did this evening, which I thought was very impressive, was he would...
You on English time.
Yeah, exactly. He would get over and shut somebody... I mean, it's pitch black out here at 4 p.m., so yeah, whatever. Evening works. He would, like, get over to shut something down, but when the ball went back across 20 yards, like a little bit more central, he has the pace and the physicality to get back over and shut that down too.
Yes.
And
that's
so it's not just running around... Mm-hmm. It's disciplined defensive running.
Mm-hmm. Can I also, I want to see if you agree that Weston McKennie, mm-hmm. Once we switched to the more aggressive defensive stance,
yep.
I thought Weston McKennie was much, much better. And then because the space opened up, he was able to do a lot of, he would demand the ball off of Miazga mm-hmm. and Brooks. He would drive forward and then he would sort of pick out a pass that no one had seen. Yep. He would really get things going. It wasn't for a long stretch of the game. It's probably 25 or 30 minutes total. But Weston McKennie, I think for the first time in a while, we saw the Weston McKennie we were hoping to see in a US shirt.
I agree. And I would also say that we saw Weston McKennie who can be. I feel like today was a day where I saw signs of him being a future US captain.
Yes.
And it was because you spotted this, and I will continue on from it, is there was a moment after, I believe, England had either right before or right after they'd scored both their goals, where the United States get the ball back and Weston McKennie tells everybody calm down.
Yes.
And it's not just that. It's not just that he
tells did the Ross from
down.
Friends,
He
right?
did. Well, Ross from Friends is more of like a like mouth together sort of thing. Like,
oh, okay.
Or thumb makes the mouth. You know what I'm talking about? But here, it's not just like anybody can say like, hey, we got to calm down. And I would say you and I have both been in those games where it's like everybody wants to shoot the whole time or everybody's playing long balls over the top. And when you get the ball, it can sort of seep into your brain and you're like, I know I told everybody not to do it, but that long ball's on. And then suddenly you're doing it too. And the thing I thought was really interesting in Weston McKennie is that he kind of practiced what he preached or preached what he practiced, which was he told everybody to calm down. But then when he would get the ball, he played simple. Even when he went on runs, there weren't a lot of like step over driving and then he won a physical challenge and held onto the ball. As soon as he came under pressure, he would make the pass but then continue the run and open up space or get the ball back in a 1-2.
Yeah.
And it felt like he wanted everybody to calm it down and slow it down and play simple. So he himself did that and led by example.
So in the post-Sarakin era, under whomever the next coach mm-hmm. may be, that's a little glimmer of optimism that that is what we might see.
Yeah, I'm sure Greg Berhalter was happy with that performance.
Was he there?
He was watching, I'm sure.
Was he in Will Trapp's suitcase?
I'm sure he was signing documents.
Weston McKennie doing that under the next coach, that's uh-huh. a little glimmer of optimism that we might get.
You still won't say his name, will you? You still won't say his
name? I don't know for sure. I don't want to have egg on my face after mm-hmm. I go all in on saying Greg Berhalter is definitely the next US coach.
That's fair. It's just that we now, like, there's the old SNL sketch about, like, after Three Mile Island, when they're, like, the joke is, like, Jimmy Carter was contaminated and has grown to giant proportions, and the media are asking questions, and his press secretary is, like,
I haven't seen this.
It is absolutely ridiculous to speculate that Jimmy Carter is, like, 70 feet tall. And then a reporter says, I've heard that he's 75 feet tall, and the response is, no comment. And it's like, you've sort of given it away at that point, and if you've ruled out, if it's been publicly stated that every single other possible candidate has not been interviewed,
yeah, yeah.
It leaves you with maybe one candidate remaining.
Okay, someone should
James
ask,
Sarakin.
At a press conference, someone should ask, I've heard a rumor that Greg Berhalter is 75 feet tall.
And then we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Then we'll see what happens.
Trap him with logic.
Yep.
Okay.
Is that logic?
It is not.
Okay.
It is not.
Yep.
There's a third goal to talk mm-hmm. about. I can
oh, good.
Barely remember it. I remember
Callum Wilson.
Callum Wilson.
Beats
John Brooks. Is it a low ball in?
Yes,
across,
it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Callum Wilson gets across John Brooks and gets there first. Is this John Brooks' fault?
I mean, it's a very good ball from Fabian Delph, so I wouldn't take anything
Oh, who's
away
playing
from
left
him.
Back at this point,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
He moves to left back spot. Again, it's difficult to really judge John Brooks and Matt Miazga because I felt like so many times they had that – like frustrating situation of being the last person trying to make a play on the ball. So then it looks like it's their fault. Mm-hmm. Here again, it seemed like John Brooks was trying to track multiple runs while paying attention to the cross, while keeping an offside line. And it did feel like he was kind of left vulnerable. That said, a thing that Taylor Twellman talked about in the pregame was how often it seems like Matt Miazga and John Brooks kind of aren't aware of what's going on around them and maybe don't communicate.
I disagreed with that.
I think I do too, because this would look like that example of somebody didn't tell John Brooks, hey, he's making this run. But I think I'll agree with you then and say I think we're both inclined to believe that it's less about the two of them communicating and more about not having a lot of cover from the midfield.
Yeah.
So then they're paying attention to maybe somebody at the top of the box, but Callum Wilson running through, but also the cross from Fabian Delph, but also keeping an offside line, and also what Brad Guzan is telling them. And it's just too much for one person to be able to handle.
They're basically trying to put out other people's fires, right?
Yeah.
And then it's no – to me, the examples that – Taylor Twellman narrated at the start of the broadcast on ESPN, there was a lot of essentially them having to – they get disconnected because one of them has to step out to cover something that someone else has done wrong, right? And then you don't get to have just like a solid two defenders sitting next to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so like it's frustrating. It's good that Callum Wilson was able to get his goal on his debut. That's nice.
Yeah.
It's a shame that Wayne Rooney wasn't.
It actually, this was not Wayne Rooney's debut. It was the opposite of a debut.
Well, he wasn't able to get us on his final one.
Yeah.
His final debut? Is that how it works? but all that is to say that, like, we still have the game against Italy to come. Unless, do you have more things to say before I kind of wrap us up?
Not really, except to remind everyone that Trent Alexander-Arnold is American a little bit. So therefore, he is now Trent Alexander-Benedict Arnold.
There we go.
Because he scored against the United States.
I'm glad you got that in. But I'll say this. We have the game against Italy in Belgium for whatever reason.
On Tuesday.
And then
and money.
We expect, then we expect there to be an announcement at some point. A permanent manager comes in January. So
but we'll hear about it before January.
We certainly will. Right? But I would say, like, so I would, don't get too frustrated by these, by this result, by whatever happens against Italy. But I would say this. United States, U.S. soccer has done this to themselves, and I'm not saying it's fair to whomever takes over. We think it will be Greg Berhalter, but whoever that coach is, I think they're entering with not a lot of patience. As in, I don't think fans...
From the fans?
I don't think they're going to get...
From the podcast?
From anyone. I think you're not going to have quite that bump that you usually get when the old manager goes out, the new manager comes in, and everybody feels like it's a breath of fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like because we've been kind of starved for oxygen for 13 months now, it's not going to be relief. It's going to be more like, okay, we can breathe again. What you got? And I don't... And I just think...
What you got?
U.S. soccer need to keep that in mind, that they need to be treating 2019 like a year where they could lose a lot of people, I think, because they've already lost some. And I think if they continue to take for granted the support and enthusiasm people have for the U.S. men's national team, that could be very much to their chagrin.
Okay, so patience may be low with the U.S. men's national team.
A little bit.
But confidence is kind of high with the U.S. women's national team, and they're going to have a big 2019 with the Women's World Cup coming.
That is true.
And even better, they can win in the United Kingdom.
Also that. Who knew it was possible?
We're going to talk about the US's 1-0 win away to Scotland. I believe it was at the St Mirren Stadium, based on some of the banners.
I don't know. My Scottish Gaelic isn't great.
But we'll talk about that
as well.
That was an experience. But first, today's show is sponsored by Roughneck Scarves, official scarf providers to US soccer and others. But we're going to focus...
And others.
And others. But we're going to focus... on US soccer.
We sure are.
So Roughneck Scarves makes all kinds of high quality scarves. We have more than I can count. Mm-hmm. We've got some for ourselves, some that other people have given us. They also come in sections, right? So there's a specific US national team section. Some are USMNT. Some are just vague US soccer themed. Mm-hmm. Some are specifically US women's national team.
And I hope the ones that are specifically women's national team themed are like the thicker, more wool ones. Because I have to say, watching that game in Scotland with like the rain coming down, everybody looking pretty cold, including the people in the stands who had like 14 coats on. So I'm guessing the players on the field less warm. It definitely made me think maybe a scarf would be useful right there.
What can I say? It's a lot warmer in London than it is in Scotland.
All right.
If you're looking at these two games. It won't be so cold in France in the summer, though, when the US women's national team is playing at the World Cup. But you could still have a scarf to show your support.
Yeah, if it is, then the day after tomorrow has happened. And, you know, all bets are off when it comes to the World Cup.
We got bigger problems.
Exactly.
Yeah. So if you go to roughneckscarves.com, roughneckscarves.com.
See the Scottish accent's coming out.
Yeah, you can. If you go to the shop for scarves, hover over it, which is, I believe, what you say on the internet, scroll down, and there'll be US soccer themed. There's also the US Women's National Team Players Association.
Are you just shopping now? Is that what's happening?
I actually do have... I have it open in my browser because I forgot about it. No, I'm going to show you. Look, there's a bunch of scarves with specific US Women's National Team players
and
numbers on there.
I did not know that.
Alex Morgan, Lisa Nia, Carly Lloyd, Becky Sauerbrunn.
Is there a Rose Lavelle? If there's a Rose Lavelle, that might have to happen.
There's not.
Get it together, Roughnecks, guys. No, but you've got Tobin Heath, you've got Klingenberg, Morgan Bryan, Lindsay Horan, Megan Rapinoe, Alex Morgan.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of the big names. I increasingly enjoy what I see from Rose Lavelle. I would get a Rose Lavelle scarf. We'll talk about that in a moment.
We're going to talk about... There should be a Rose Lavelle one just covered in roses with a rose pattern, right?
It's a little on the nose, but I'll allow it. I'll allow it.
Only if it's very cold, you wear the scarf on the nose.
Exactly.
If you go to roughneckscarves.com, shop around. You can buy any scarf that you see on there. There are all kinds of national team designs, men's and women's. It's roughneckscarves.com. You get 20% off if you use the discount code TOTALSOCCERSHOW, all one word. Total Soccer Show, all one word, at roughneckscarves.com for 20% off any scarf you see.
So thank you to Roughneck Scarves for sponsoring today's episode and for keeping people's necks warm. It's an important job out there, especially, as we said, when it's in the cold, cold rain in Scotland, which is where the United States women defeated Scotland 1-0.
Yes.
And I'm going to say a good, interesting game to start and a physical game to end.
I want to ask you about this. Uh-huh. So when we talked about, we did the US men's preview and the women's game was happening at that time. And we hadn't seen a second of it, but we'd just maybe seen some Twitter reports.
Yep.
And you had the impression that the US team had not done very well.
They were the general consensus that I saw on Twitter, it's Twitter, so grain of salt there, was that, it was a pretty underwhelming, unimpressive, kind of disjointed performance.
How do you feel after watching it?
I feel like maybe that is coming out of World Cup qualifying and some of the games the U.S. women have been playing lately where they were winning 6-7-0.
Yeah.
I think to go on the road in inclement weather against a team that will be at the World Cup and get a result.
Worth noting, Scotland will be at the World Cup.
And get a result. I think that's very good. And it reminds me, as I said to you when we were watching it, of the 2015 World Cup team that people were critical, people weren't impressed by some of the soccer. But they ended up getting the job done, obviously.
The entire trophy.
There we go. and so this game felt like that a little bit, but it also felt like what people have wanted Jill Ellis to start doing, or maybe have been frustrated. They've been frustrated with this, is that she's experimenting a little bit, moving some players around, trying different things. And it feels like she's trying to establish depth, number one, and number two, different attacking looks and defensive looks to throw out if opponents have figured out the U.S. or have come with a specific game plan.
Yeah.
And that's what this felt like, was trying things like Carly Lloyd as a center forward and Alex Morgan out wide. Like, that's happened before, but lately we've been seeing them more in that 4-3-3 with Carly Lloyd sitting in midfield. Little things like that. Crystal Dunn now playing as more of an attacking midfielder as opposed to a fullback.
A central midfielder, which was quite exciting. She was one of the midfield three, right? She played left center and right center in the two halves, before we get into maybe some specific experiments that we saw, I also want to make the point that, you said it quickly, Scotland have qualified for the World Cup, I believe, for the first time. There was no Kim Little, which is the only player that I was really super familiar with. I think I had mentioned that maybe she might play in this game. Turns out she her leg was broken.
Yeah, they weren't that desperate.
In a horrible tackle, but there were still, I looked at the roster, there are players who've played in the NWSL, players who are playing in the top division in England, players playing in Sweden. This is a decent international team. And when they come up against the US and they defended, right, in a sort of 4-5-1, that's a challenge. That's much more of a challenge than the US women had in qualifying.
Let me ask you this. Did you look at their roster on Wikipedia?
Yes.
How many red links were there next to player names?
None.
That is always the first hurdle. That's the first bar. If you're playing against a team where that most of the names are red, implying that they do not have a link, that means that maybe they're not quite at that level.
A red link team.
Yes. So if you got all blue, purple links, whatever they are, then maybe that tells you that you're playing an opponent of a little bit higher quality.
So Scotland are not a red link team.
They're not.
We can establish that. Okay, so we only finished 1-0. That includes a missed penalty by Carly Lloyd. Do you think the US did a decent enough job of breaking down Scotland or not?
I would say I don't know is my honest answer. And that's mostly because the goal comes from moving the ball around, certainly, but it is just kind of a cross into the box.
Yeah, Mallory Pugh crosses for Carly Lloyd, I want to say, but Alex Morgan gets inside, like runs inside the fullback and is there to volley it at the far post.
She does, and it's a great finish. And it's definitely Scotland being a little bit nervous about Carly Lloyd because there had been a moment just before where the goalkeeper spills the ball because Carly Lloyd is there.
Yes.
So it felt like the defenders were very preoccupied with Lloyd, so Alex Morgan runs in and gets that volley. But I say I don't know because it didn't seemed to me like the United States had recognized, oh, Scotland are kind of being defensive, sitting back. They had a few pop-outs going back to the USA-England game. But for the most part,
they seemed to do it more successfully.
Yeah, it felt like they did a good job. I think Scotland did it more successfully, but also it felt like the United States took until like the 30th minute to start having players exploit that space that was vacated by the pop-out.
Actually, can I just make this point? The reason the Scottish pop-outs did not cause as much trouble for Scotland is because Scotland played when they were defending basically a 4-5-1.
Yeah.
So when one player popped out, there were still four midfielders holding the shape.
Yeah, and you would see...
I'm going to let the pop-outs go after this.
All right. No, but it's worth going back to because there was a moment when I think it was Dahlkemper kind of like moves forward with the ball. Maybe it was Becky Sauerbrunn. And they're clearly looking to play wide to stretch Scotland out more and then have some combinations and then get a shot off from the top of the box or inside the 18.
Yeah.
And instead, they kind of look and have to turn and recycle possession because Scotland have sat so defensive and done it so well. So that it comes from a cross is, I guess, good because they've been able to find space to get that cross in and they've found somebody on the end of it.
Yeah, Manu definitely had a lot of space to hit that cross, right?
And I know that I'm setting all this up to do a but I guess what
You had me fooled.
Yeah, well, I guess what I'm trying to say, though, is that it still wasn't the case that they adjusted things so much that then you had fluid 1-2s through and they were able to kind of play through the middle and get shots that way. Crystal Dunn did a lot of good hard work and a lot of good technical move to, like, find the space, turn, play the ball out wide, or get the ball back. I thought Rose Lavelle did the same.
Yes.
Again, Rose Lavelle's scarf is needed.
Isn't that like two of the smartest and most technically gifted players, and the US fielded them both in central midfield?
Yeah.
And it was just every time they got the ball, they were like made good use of it, essentially.
So it's still, but it still wasn't the case that those two were able to like combine with enough regularity to get a lot of shots off.
Yeah.
So it's still the United States getting a win and finding a way to score against a very compact defensive team, but it was maybe not quite as like electrifying and fluid as people might have wanted.
Yes. It did get more end-to-end and open when the US made a few substitutions and changed shape.
Yeah.
I want to say we ended up in a sort of 3-4-3 with like Julie Ertz joining the centre-backs, and then we had both the full-backs, so Fox and Sonnet were subbed out by that point. And we had just attacking players as our wing-backs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you start to get the game more stretched. It also felt like that was when Scotland started putting some bodies in. And maybe there were a few moments when they didn't. Like, I think Emily Sonnet, who was already on a yellow card, sort of went shoulder-to-shoulder with the player about 10 yards away from the ball.
Uh-huh.
And that felt like it ratcheted up tensions a little
bit. Or maybe that's one of the reasons she got subbed out, was just to not let that get any worse.
That's possible. Yeah. Or not to get a red card suspension. That would also probably not be ideal if you're Jill Ellis. But it felt like after that, like when Dani Colaprico came in, there was definitely one moment when she gets the ball and you can see her definitely see a Scottish player coming and just sort of does like the side pass shuffle of like, I don't want any part of that. I'm not trying to get cleared out.
I'm not here to get smashed.
Yeah.
Any other overarching thoughts about this performance?
Yeah, I mean, we alluded to it before. We have to mention it here. We watched this on Fox Soccer Match Pass. The commentary was one of the more confusing. Like, we both were like, have we lost our minds?
Yeah.
What's going on?
So we finally figured it out.
Yeah.
We should have ignored it and just focused on the game. But we ended up, after watching the game, we'd go back and listen to like little bits of what was going on. So obviously this wasn't what was broadcast on Fox Sports.
I would assume not.
But Fox Soccer Match Pass is often a feed they've taken from somewhere else. I'm going to assume it's Scottish television.
Mm-hmm.
So you had the play-by-play commentator, who I'm sorry, his name, I do not know, doing play-by-play in Scottish Gaelic or Scots Gaelic. And his colour commentator, whose name was Pauline, who only spoke English, right? She was Scottish, she only spoke English. So you would get play-by-play in Scots Gaelic, and then you would hear the play-by-play guy switch to English so that he could then ask Pauline a question. Then Pauline would give an answer in English, and then he would switch back to Scots Gaelic.
Yep.
And I couldn't help thinking, like, Pauline's there. She doesn't know what the play-by-play guy's saying.
Nope.
We were very confused. We thought we'd accidentally taken acid or something.
It was also the case that I think for a moment they didn't know which camera to show. So we got some weird, like, the top of a player's head and then the ball going out of bounds and then some empty stands for a little bit of time.
I'd love to know which feed this was.
And then we fast-forwarded and it was still that, but then suddenly there was an English voice speaking. It was or I guess an English language voice. It was very confusing for a moment there, but it all came together. We figured it out in the end.
How many Scottish listeners? Oh, Alan Fraser, I know, listens because he's the one that's reminded me about Kim Little.
Andy Marr?
Andy Marr, but Andy Marr lives in Richmond, not in Scotland. Maybe he would know that, but I'd love to know if they know who that might be. Someone speaking Scots Gaelic but then switching to English with his co-commentator. What channel could that be? I want to track this down. It's fascinating.
I also enjoyed your mini debate you had with yourself of, is it Scots Gaelic or is it Dutch? Which was another interesting
one. Very similar, right? Yeah.
You know, we all common ancestors and whatnot. It works out. It's fine.
Pangaea. We used to speak the Pangean.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it was. One common language. Why not?
Okay, outside of the commentary team, mm-hmm. Anything else about the U.S. women's national team?
I have some thoughts on Pangea. No, nothing else other than to say, like, again, I would just caution people who get overly frustrated with the U.S. women's national team in the lead up to the World Cup, because it's worth remembering that teams are specifically game planning for them because they are one of, if not the, I would say the best teams in the world.
Yes.
So then you've got to look at it as these are teams setting up to be ultra defensive. That the United States is finding ways to still get the result is very impressive. And it's also, again, you're going on the road in Europe. I wouldn't say a hostile crowd, but a certainly difficult environment to play in with the rain and the cold.
They did have that let's go Scotland, let's go.
They did have that several times. Pretty vicious.
Terrifying.
But just to go on the road in Europe, get the result, you're still winning. It still feels like very good preparation, and they're figuring some things out for the World Cup. We saw in a few different moments in that game, it had to be on purpose, the like lateral press where all 11 players
were. Yes, I knew it was a big thing we'd missed.
Maybe within like 15 yards mm-hmm. of the sideline. Like, that's very telling that they had everybody pressed over there.
Squeeze everything over. And most tellingly, though, they won the ball back.
They did.
So, you're right. That was an experiment. I'm mm-hmm. going to say it's somewhat successful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would just say, like, keep that in mind when you watch some of these games, because they're probably going to lose before the World Cup happens, and we should kind of want them to, because it means there's been a vulnerability showed or a system doesn't work, and they can scratch that off and move on.
I would argue, I don't think I have deep enough knowledge to say this confidently, but I'm going to argue that the U.S. only winning 1-0 against Portugal and Scotland, who are not high-ranked European mm-hmm. teams, but they're, you know, decent-ish, is sort of like somewhat of a failure results-wise, because mm-hmm. they just expect to steamroll everybody. Yeah. So I think that this is one of those experimental things where things were tried and learned and all that sort of stuff, and that it can feel like a defeat even though it's a 1-0 win. You know what I'm saying?
It's telling that with the U.S. women, failure is still like a 1-0 win, and failure is still like, okay, but this is an opportunity to grow, and we know things are going to get better. And with the U.S. men, it's more like, just stop failing, please. Just stop failing. It was rainy conditions, physical game at times. It was still so much more fun to watch than that USA-England game, mm-hmm. I'll say that much.
Fair, yeah. I actually don't know the women's schedule for 2019 yet, but I'm going to assume that this was the most extreme experimentation that we will have seen, and that building towards the World Cup in the summer, we're going to see, I would guess, in like the March friendlies and stuff, more the actual team mm-hmm. and then fine-tuning the actual team.
And
you get what I'm saying?
I do, and I'm guessing that we'll get one of those opponents, like maybe a France. Like, we'll get somebody that we would expect to see again, France or Sweden or Germany, somebody
like that. Bigger opposition. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. And if anyone's wondering, we are, of course, going to pay even more attention to the U.S. women's national team as the World Cup gets closer, as
we
really ramp up to that tournament.
This is the plan.
The summer of 2019, there's a lot going on.
There is indeed.
Yeah. Don't take any time off, Taylor.
I'm not planning to. Don't worry. I shall not be retiring.
All right, Taylor Rockwell, thank you for taking the time to talk to me today.
Yeah, I might retire. Right back at you, buddy.
Listeners, thank you for listening. It is not too late. It's Thursday night. We're going to be back with another show on Friday, a listener question special. So keep your ears peeled for that one.